Hello and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. A group of North Fork residents just returned from Washington, D.C., where they spoke with decision makers regarding the community's vision for the future. Clean water, agriculture, protected landscapes, and a diverse economy were all topics of discussion. I'm here with members of this North Fork delegation to find out how their trip went. Alex Johnson, Executive Director at the Western Slope Conservation Center, Mary Marshall of Solar Energy International, and local business owner Frederick Zimmer join me today. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Thanks, Allie.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So you were in Washington, D.C. To meet with legislators, the BLM, public policy research and advocacy organizations, and this happened in the first week of June. How did you form this delegation, and what were your goals going into it?
Thanks, Allie. So the Western Slope Conservation Center has been engaged in a number of public land processes over the last few years, which, you know, I've spoken here with you on the air before about the BLM resource management plan, the forest plan revisions just getting started. Oil and gas, of course, is a topic of perennial concern and discussion here in our community. And so for us, there's a real tangible benefit of going to D.C. to communicate directly to our decision makers about what we care about as a community, what's really going on the ground within our landscape. And hopefully then those decision makers are making more informed, conscious decisions on the future for our landscapes and for our watershed and for our communities.
One thing I would add to that, going to D.C., I think, gives us a much better reference, kind of a working knowledge of how things function there and how we need to function in order to participate in the system. So we're not just another yapping voice that's like, we're important, do what we want. So I think that's a big thing we took away as a group, to understand how to go forward and how to really be in a functioning partnership, ideally, with our government.
The other part of your question was, how did we form? And we wanted to have representative stakeholders from the community to be the ones, really relaying what's going on, what's of concern, what is the real impacts of the decisions that they're making. So Pete Kolbenschlag of Colorado Farm and Food Alliance and I, on behalf of Western Slope Conservation Center, really tried to find those community members. So that was Frederick Zimmer, who's a small business owner, Mary Marshall with Solar Energy International, Wink Davis of Mesa Winds Farm, and Karen Ortiz, who's the chair of the Western Slope Conservation Center.
One of the topics that you discussed with various different legislators and the BLM were the public lands in our area. So tell me how those meetings went and a little bit about who you met with.
I think those meetings went reasonably well, considering what they were. Again, that was an opportunity for us. Alex can tell you better, more specifically, who exactly we met with. But that was an opportunity for us to make our point and to get a sense from their side of the discussion how we need to package our objectives so that it's something they can use. And basically, our point is that we have an economy that is happening. It's developing, and it's at a point that it's self-sustaining, and it's evidenced in a lot of different ways throughout the community. And our biggest point to them is, please listen to what we have to say. See, look at what we're showing you, because this is an economy that needs your participation and support, in that it won't coexist with heavy fracking and oil and gas. I mean, if we do it properly, we can all coexist. But if you just come through and slam through what is the typical idea and what has been the history, it's going to destroy the elements that are required for this new economy to continue to develop and thrive.
And what is that new economy in your view?
Well, I think that's what was really well represented by Alex and Pete's choices as far as who they brought for representatives, because there was myself with the recreation, the bikes, and other aspects of the recreational community, then also from my point of view, new home buyers and people wanting the construction side of things, and then Wink with more the agricultural and the wineries, the food. And then Mary was an awesome piece for their renewable energy, and she can definitely hold her own with any Washington, whoever.
Yeah, so from my perspective, also with another one of our goals, really just to elevate the North Fork as a really great resilient model, as what we said, a sustainable community. I came in with some personal experience about how I work with economic development through solar and renewables. So I gave some examples about local community programs that we have where we've seen in the past 2 years over $1 million invested in clean energy locally. And we've seen the addition of new solar systems, not just for residential systems, but also for business owners. And we've seen this be an opportunity in economic development for businesses and farms to really just keep some of our money here in Delta County by creating our own energy and keeping our money here instead of, you know, sending a lot of our money out of the valley to our utility bills. It's a great way to encourage sustainability here and grow our own economy, not just through jobs, but creating that sense of resiliency and independence. So I kind of came in as just one of the pieces of the puzzle that is the change that's happening in Delta County, where we have solutions that exist through things like renewable energy and different opportunities that will sustain this growth that we're seeing. Hmm.
So you're getting into the idea that our public lands and use of our public lands is directly tied to our economic growth.
Right.
Precisely.
So can you expand on that a little bit, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we met with a variety of people over a pretty short window of time. It was I wouldn't call it harrowing necessarily, but it was definitely jam-packed. Yeah, whirlwind is a good way to put it. And each of those meetings, you know, there while the tenor and tone was different, I would say across the board, whether it was Senator Bennett, who we got to meet with, Representative Tipton's staff, Senator Gardner's staff, the BLM, deputy directors of several different offices within the BLM, they all were very interested in this story that we had to tell about this place. We talked about it as a group beforehand and during, but it's real, it's authentic, it's this compelling story of this location where we have a variety of different resources that we are able to take advantage of, and they all can overlap. And you know, over the last 140 years almost, that people have been attempting to do that in a way that maintains the long-term use of those resources. And so that's really what we, you know, really tried to portray. You know, people, regardless of the different tones, in particular, I thought that everyone was really interested in what Mary had to say about the renewables and solar energy development that's happening. You know, it's just interesting that we have been a agricultural area and an energy development area for over a century. And, you know, that appears to be, you know, continuing, but the forms of agriculture and the forms of energy are changing, and people really saw that. And I think that spoke to decision makers.
One thing that you mentioned about new energy opportunities and how this area, there's a potential for homegrown power, where we're actually generating all the energy that we need in our area ourselves. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Diversifying your energy market and diversifying your energy resources, it creates a resiliency. It really just sort of stabilizes your energy resources. So I think that developing solar even more is such an exciting opportunity. And it can start on the community level. So our efforts at SEI through our Solarize programs back in 2015, we encouraged community solar through an incentivized program, or if more people could go solar, more people could save money together. And this has just grown so much over the past 2 years. This year we have a program entirely devoted to agriculture. So encouraging renewable energy, not just in solar, but there are other opportunities that exist in methane capture, which we also talked about in DC, and microhydro. There's just a lot of opportunity there to have your own locally produced energy for your community, keeping money within your local community, and keeping that as a sustainable growth model.
Other homegrown energy pieces is the methane capture opportunity. So we have a pilot project right now at Oxbow, but we also have a huge amount of methane that's being vented from our coal mines, you know, where there's a lot of resource that's just being vented into the atmosphere that could be captured, which would not only produce more energy, but that would also reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And that's a really pretty significant amount of emissions from our local mining activity. And so Senator Bennett actually has recently introduced a bill that includes a provision for the North Fork specifically to create the mechanisms to identify an inventory, then lease, and then ideally to create a market for that methane to be captured. So there's that opportunity. There's the solar opportunities that SEI is really playing a lead role on, and then also DMEA is a pretty remarkable rural energy generation co-op, and that is something that they're nationally recognized and really providing a leadership in attempting to increase renewable energy generation, including through microhydro, is another amazing resource we have locally that can provide quite a bit of local energy independence and diversity of that energy portfolio.
I had another question about the methane capture, because recently there was a proposed bill that would just eliminate the requirements for methane capture. And I wondered, why would anybody be opposed to methane capture? Because it actually makes people money. And you know what I'm saying? It's another...
We know what you're saying.
So I'm wondering, why, who out there in the big world was thinking that they needed to get rid of methane capture?
Well, invariably, and particularly within the energy world and energy decision-making, politics gets involved. And so the methane rule was actually an administrative rule that was put on the books during the Obama administration. And so then Congress voted whether to rescind that rule or to keep it on the books. And so that was the vote that happened quite recently. And fortunately, the Senate voted to maintain that rule on a national level. Colorado has its own methane rule that actually which is very similar. The national rule is actually modeled after the Colorado rule, and so we're fortunate that those rules still exist, and that's really to minimize the emissions and the lost resources within the oil and gas industry specifically. Another answer to that question is that it does cost money to create the infrastructure and to improve the infrastructure to capture that methane. In particular, one good example here locally with West Elk Mine is that just the by nature of the the design of the mine, the vents are dispersed and not conveniently located near the highway. So that could mean increase road maintenance and increase road building potentially, and increased activity, surface activity in area, fairly sensitive areas. That's also more money for the mine. And so, if it doesn't pencil out, then it doesn't really make sense for them to be capturing that methane either.
All right. I see now. Thank you.
Yeah.
Frederick, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, just the whole topic of rural economic development. So you own a store here. You're part owner of of the Cirque. So you guys have three businesses in one, basically, including a bicycle shop and like a boutique and then also a restaurant. So you are probably seeing more tourists and new residents of this area. Who are the new people coming into town? Because I think that's always been a big question here is when we're trying to figure out how we want to develop this area, who is it that we want living here? And who are we to decide, really? But that always seems to come up when we're talking about how to develop the area.
Right, and I think who we are attracts who wants to come. You know, this community that we're creating, this economy, is attracting. We've always, well, not, I can't say always, but in the time that I've lived here, and I see this through construction also, people I've worked for building homes, there have been a good retirement community, people showing up. But these days, there are more and more younger families coming to town, and that's a big shift. And again, there are some elements that play into that, and this is a piece that we also used in our discussion with Washington, that the investment, $100 million investment for fiber optic has changed a lot of things around here. There are a lot of people that can live here now and work elsewhere, and they can really be in the game as opposed to before. You know, I had several friends that were doing that, and it's really tedious. So that's opening up the possibility, and places like SEI and the construction market, there are more and more places for new people to come and find work, and so that's a big factor. But I guess more specifically to answer your question, what I'm seeing is more and more younger families, mm-hmm. and and Amy could give you even more detail on this being at the shop all the time, but what we see a lot is people come for a visit, and then shortly thereafter, they move here. it's like that kind of thing.
That says a lot about the place.
Yeah, it does. It does, But, a lot of that is the agricultural piece. The quality of life, is really what it comes down to. And that was a big piece we tried to offer to people in D.C. is like, there's something here that's of value, and people are coming here because of what's being created. And that's a cool piece of it, that these things are all in the works. They're established. It's not like we're starting from square one. Everybody's been working for years now to make these things happen. And it's bearing fruit. And your question kind of speaks to that, where it's like new people are coming to town because they can afford to live here now. I don't know if they can buy a house anymore, but they can afford it.
I just want to add, especially with some of the strides we've made in developing our renewable energy market here, I think that often we can almost set a precedent for other rural communities going through the same transition, not just in Colorado, but all over the country, as with what we're doing with renewables and kind of moving forward with our economy in the wake of some struggles. I think that it's really important to elevate the North Fork as an example and as a model that can be scalable to similar regions throughout the country.
And if you're just joining us, I'm here with Mary Marshall of Solar Energy International, Alex Johnson, Executive Director at the Western Slope Conservation Center, and Frederick Zimmer, a local business owner and general contractor. And they just returned from Washington, D.C. They were part of a delegation that spoke with decision makers regarding this community's vision for the future. So you met with Senator Bennett, actually the senator himself, mm-hmm. which doesn't always happen when you go into these meetings. Where do you feel Bennett is aligned with this delegation's goals? And did you make any appeals to him?
He made an appeal to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really fantastic meeting that we had with Senator Bennett. He took the time out of what was clearly a very busy day to sit down with us, and he asked us, you know, he said, well, first he said how much he loves the North Fork Valley. And, you know, it was very genuine. You know, he just really does have a soft spot in his heart for this area. And, you know, that, of course, is very heartening to see. And then he proceeded to ask us a question. He said, okay, so you have this very compelling story. You know, there's all of these things that seem to be going right there. You know, what can I do as senator to help replicate create a model for what's going right there and provide it to other communities in Colorado specifically, so that we can, you know, raise all of the boats together. And, you know, that's the Western Slope as a whole, that's the Eastern Plains. You know, and he's seemed genuinely concerned about how does he raise the profile and the economy and the, you know, the quality of life across all of rural Colorado. And so that was his question to us. And that's what we're hoping that we as a community can present to Senator Bennett is, okay, you know, that this is what we see as a vision for our community. This is what's going right. This is how you can help continue that momentum. And here's how you can replicate it elsewhere. And, you know, we would love to help do that.
You know, that was my first time in D.C. in that context. And it was great to see Senator Bennett really wanting to sit at the table and talk to us. And more than once, his assistant opened the door and said, you need to go. And he's like, just one minute. So that was really heartening.
Early on in the meeting, he called a staff person and said, "Do we still have the thank you note? Do we still have the thank you?" And then they brought in this huge poster that everyone who had organized around the oil and gas leasing in over the last few years created this amazing thank you card with pictures of all sorts of North Fork residents and in the North Fork saying thank you, Senator Bennett. And he had it up on his wall and has had it up there for years, and I'm sure put it back up on the wall.
Yeah.
So it's really pretty remarkable.
And just as it being my first time in DC as well, just seeing that in Senator Bennett's office, the reputation of the North Fork is known there, and they had so many positive things to say. It made me feel really inspired, and I just realized how I was so lucky to be a part of something big and efforts that have been going on for a while, and that we were lucky enough to get the opportunity to continue there. So it was really great to see how people know about the North Fork and they know that we have something special going on here.
You also met with the staff from Senator Scott Tipton's office and from Cory Gardner's office. And so they're not as typically aligned with maybe some of the goals that this group has. What message did you want to get to them, and how did it go?
I think we were offering the same message across the board. And I think Mary's point about the meeting with Bennett being inspirational, and Alex says it was just serendipity the way the meetings laid out, but we started out with a lot of really positive, supportive interaction. And then we went met with Tipton and Gardner staffs, and it's, you know, they approached the discussion from a little different point. And to me, again, my first time there, that was the most informative aspect of the trip. We know Senator Bennett supports us. We know he's on our side. That's almost easy. He's asking us for input. It's the other side of the conversation that we really need to understand how to present our point to get their attention. And that was the value, I think, of those meetings. And again, it was the same basic conversation received in a little different timbre, you might say. But
when you're talking about things like local economic development, it's really easy to be on the same page because this is something that's so crucial. You know, the North Fork, we're not the only rural community looking for ways to grow our economy. So when we're talking about things that can really benefit our economy, you know, everyone was really receptive. And for example, when we were talking to Tipton staff, one of the programs that I'm working on right now was directly benefited from some legislation that he worked on back in 2013 that opened the market for micro hydro and just created some micro hydro job growth in Colorado. So when we talk about things that help the economy and create a sustainable economy, it's easy to be on the same page and find level ground because we're all supportive in creating local jobs and finding ways to sustain our efforts and our, you know, our economy. So it was easy to find level ground when we all got really down to the core of what we believe. We find that we can be on the same page.
I think that's a really good point. And I think yeah, that very much was the bottom line of what we were bringing to Washington. And I think that's why, you know, even in offices like Representative Tipton's, you know, that, you know, where some of the policy questions we may have disagreed or disagree actively, it's a really compelling story that we have these common values and we have these common visions for what we want this place to be. We know we love it. And likely those reasons we love it are very more similar than different. And I think there's so many people wanting desperately even for a unifying message, you know, something that can bridge the divide that's, you know, just so potent right now and that felt very potent while in DC. And I think this is a story that we're offering that is really unifying in that way.
What they asked us for was articulate for us how you as a community are willing to work together, what you're willing to give up, each of you, what you're willing to invest, each of you, and create a coalition, because that's where it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is what we got. And that, if and when, and that, those things are already taking place mm-hmm. in the North Fork. But as we continue to develop that, that's the piece that gets us a seat at the table to sit down and be part of the discussion.
There are a lot of people out there that seem to think that representative democracy is just dead, and they don't see the value in writing to their representatives, and they don't see the value in sort of playing the game that's set up for us to have democracy and have how decisions get made. What would you want to say to those people who are sort of that disillusioned at this point with our political system?
Well, I guess I would say that if we refuse to participate in it, then it is dead. And if we continue to do the really difficult work of having the conversations, these really difficult conversations of making decisions together across differences at all levels, then democracy isn't dead. And it's, in fact, it's very much alive. And, you know, that's what, you know, coming back here for me, just being reinvigorated in doing that on the ground, really, really personal conversation dialogue every day as a community. That to me is what I came back with and wanted to make sure that we shared. And you know, that's what we'll be doing tonight at the CIRC, is, you know, really underlining how valuable it really is to be having these conversations as a community and debating and talking about our differences, but then also hopefully finding whatever those common basic values are and how to maintain those values and protect those things that we love.
I think the key element is listen. You know, take the time to listen to what other people are saying. The people you don't agree with, listen to their entire point. Guaranteed, you don't disagree with every aspect of their argument. You know, there are places, and that's where you begin to create the coalition. You know, you've got to start. You've got to open yourself up to what else is going on. And if you don't, you're just, you know, you're the radical, and the drag is you might even be right, but you don't get that seat at the table, and that's what matters at this point.
Yeah, I would add to going back to your question, I might tell someone who might be losing some faith in democracy or in going through that process, imagine how powerful it is finding common ground with someone who you think might be at the opposite end of your spectrum of beliefs. That is powerful, and it is definitely more powerful than just giving up and saying, I don't think the system works for me. It is really productive, and it is, you know, a really great way of just finding common ground moving forward, because that is what will make a change.
Well, thank you so much to Alex Johnson, Executive Director at Western Slope Conservation Center, Mary Marshall of Solar Energy International, and local business owner Frederick Zimmer. This group will be at the CIRC Cyclery tonight at 7 p.m. to discuss their trip to D.C. in more detail, including action plans and ways that you can be involved. And again, I've been speaking with a delegation of North Fork residents who just went to Washington, D.C. Thanks again, you guys.
Thanks, Allie.
Thank you.